This is Justin with a very special edition of the Pwn podcast. This is our Gigabyte episodes where we interview industry professionals on various topics, trends, subject matter expertise. As always, our episodes are sponsored by New Harbor Security. If you're looking for an end-to-end provider of security solutions and a trusted partner that actually gives a shit, you can visit us at www.newharborsecurity.com. So this is Justin. I am joined with our co-host Zach today on our very special episode of Gigabyte. And we're joined with Travis Sanchez, who is a trusted security advisor for New Harbor Security, and Chad Lyons, who is also a trusted security advisor for New Harbor Security.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Travis, Chad, you guys want to take turns introducing yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Glad to be here. And I'm actually a trusted security advisor, as Justin had just said, for New Harbor Security, covering the Carolinas and Southern Virginia.
Perfect. That was Chad. Travis.
Hey, everybody. Travis Sanchez, trusted advisor as well, based in the Mid-Atlantic for New Harbor Security.
Travis, Chad, we'll let you guys pick who goes first, but like, how did you guys end up in the IT sector?
All right. So I grew up interested in computers. I used to build them, fix them, you name it, when as a teen. So my parents just said, you know, naturally the next progression is you do good in school and you can go be an engineer. And that's kind of what I knew. That's the goal that I was shooting after. So got into computer engineering at Penn State, lots of ones and zeros, differential calculus, made it through all that stuff. And then got my first job at IBM, realized I didn't want to be behind a, inside of a room underneath fluorescent lights, working on planar boards as a systems engineer, and took the advice of a good friend and got into sales. First sales role that I had was a job at NetApp selling primary storage with backup and recovery, and that kind of launched my IT career. I have experience in route switch and networking and firewalls shortly thereafter with Cisco Systems for 5 years. That's kind of like that was the genesis of my career in IT.
Mine is less impressive than Chad's for sure. It's funny because I've actually been in the technology field since I graduated from college, always on the sales and sales management side of the business. And for the past 25 years, what drew me to it, I love focusing on clients' problems and solving problems, business challenges with technology solutions. And it became a real passion for me in this industry. So that's kind of how I got in. I think one of the interesting things for me is that I had the great fortune of meeting up with the New Harbor team a couple years ago, and we realized there was a lot of joint synergy between the two of us and have thoroughly enjoyed working with the guys here to help our clients really address the challenges that they face in protecting their environments and dealing with the ever-changing threat landscape. So that's kind of how I got into this business and where I am today.
Obviously, things are completely turned upside down right now with the whole COVID stuff. But I want to kind of start asking you guys about trends that you're seeing within the industry. And if we can, maybe we can kind of reverse a little bit and say, and ask the question, what trends were you guys seeing prior to COVID within cybersecurity? I mean, you guys talk to everybody. You've helped so many clients secure their own networks and their own perimeter. You guys collectively help a lot of people sleep really well at night. So pre-COVID, what industry trends were you guys seeing on your side?
So I would say pre-COVID, the managed security space for us is always is fast growing for our company, but for our clients as well. So I'm seeing a continuation of that trend in the sense that customers are becoming more and more willing. In fact, they're looking for ways to outsource a lot of the functions of their security operations to companies like New Harbor, who can take some of that responsibility and manage it for them. So I'm seeing that certainly as a growing trend And also, I think the other area that is important is the endpoints are becoming more and more important to the security threat landscape for clients. So shoring up their endpoint and EDR strategy is something that we've been dealing with our clients for a long time. And one of the biggest front-leading conversations I'm having, and I don't know if Chad agrees with that, but that's kind of the two areas that I'm seeing more and more momentum around.
Yeah, Travis, is there a reason why you're seeing that shift? Like you're seeing more people ask for managed services and kind of outsourcing. And what would you attribute to seeing that change?
So each market's different, but I think in the Mid-Atlantic and certainly the areas that New Harbor serves, good talent, security resources are hard to find. People are shifting all the time, moving to different jobs. So resource availability is probably one of the biggest catalysts for that, without a doubt. I think that's huge. So from a perspective of managed services, if you can leverage a company to help augment that, augment the resources that you have to bring on board, you have a stabilization effect in your environment that isn't going to transition out after 3 or 6 or 12 months or whatever it is. So resource availability and employee retention are the two things I think we're driving that in our market for sure.
Chad, what's your thoughts on that topic?
I was going to say, I think one of the biggest challenges that CIOs are facing is this explosion of devices that are on their network and how do they handle them, right? And every one of them being increasing your attack surface and possibly being that attack vector that's going to lead to a breach within your environment. And these aren't the traditional sense of, oh, we just added a ton more laptops. These are devices that may have closed-ended operating systems, or they may have, not updated firmware very often, and they may be super vulnerable within clients' environments. So I think just how do they handle that? Obviously, various different ways to either segment your network or allow or disallow certain devices at certain times. So there's a various different approach to doing, that type of security. But I think that was one of the challenges that was looking to be solved, prior to everybody pivoting, now to an even more, expanded, attack surface with remote workers.
Chad, going back to what you were talking about, just a couple minutes ago about discovery of assets on the network and CIOs or CISOs struggling to really inventory what's on their network. For people who are unfamiliar with the security space or maybe not familiar with why that's an issue, why are we seeing that that's an issue now, whereas it wasn't as much as a prevalent issue a couple of years ago?
So again, I think it's type of devices. I mean, there's been accounts where in hotels, Wi-Fi enabled fish tanks have been tacked. And, now all of a sudden you have a bad actor inside of an environment. You take a look at some of the largest breaches and it wouldn't have been something that you would have guessed. It was, in terms of the entry point, right? An HVAC controller, right? And a contractor being able to have access to that network via that vulnerability. I just think that these things that have traditionally either been non-existent and or in some OT environments, isolated and air-gapped, the quote unquote air gap approach. I think now we're seeing these devices and it's so easy to give them an SSID and give them a password and allow them access. And not even just that, I mean, just sheer network access control, right? And being able to walk into an environment and plug into a port. I think these are the kinds of things that that are coming up and being a challenge for those that own the security infrastructure of the environment.
Are you guys hearing more from different industries, perhaps? Like, is the public sector now reaching out? I know, a lot of federal agencies that maybe had loose work from home policies before are suddenly now thrust into the majority of their staff working from home. And they tend to work with much more, PII and other information that would be potentially devastating. To be released. I've even heard of they're trying to find a way to create a portable SCIF, because intelligence agencies are also being affected by this.
I definitely think we're seeing an uptick in in public sector. Certainly financials is another area that is big, and healthcare, of course, as well, with the patient data and HIPAA issues that they face. So I think all of those are contributing, especially right now. But I think if you look at the industry and try to gauge remote, the success that they can, the individual or companies can have with remote workers, it's definitely a new uncharted territory for a lot of the public sector customers and companies that they kind of are thrust into this new reality very quickly. Something we take for granted for us, and some of the technology companies that are used to working remote and supporting their workforce remotely. A lot of our clients, this is brand new for them. And with Justin, one of Justin's previous podcasts, he talks about that. He talks about the idea that if you're lucky, you have a lot of time to plan and prepare for a remote kind of environment. I think we had less than a week in many cases for these companies to shift from on-site to remote. That's a daunting task. If you factor in what Chad's talking about from endpoints and all the devices that we all have that we bring to the corporate networks, and now you think about moving that to a remote model, it's overwhelming for sure. So we're hearing, I can't think of one industry over the other, but certainly financial and healthcare and our SLED customers for sure. We're seeing a lot of questions and interaction with right now. Do you see the same thing, Chad?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Anytime you take an organization and ask them inside of a week to pivot and to have everybody working remotely, there's a number of different ways that can happen, whether it be through VPN or whether it be some other insecure method. It's a daunting task. And the same thing in the private sector, I've seen that transition happen quickly for some. And honestly, you could give this thing additional months, and it's not going to happen in other areas, just because they're not to that level yet, for other agencies or for other organizations. So yeah, I would agree, Travis.
So we kind of talking about pre-COVID trends, and Zach just very gently eases us into current COVID trends. That's nice, Zach.
That's why I'm the co-host. Okay.
Other than remote work today, what do you hear folks kind of talking about as far as concerns related to security? And I kind of asked the question of that starts from the point of saying, like, initially I would imagine there's a lot of our clients, a lot of folks out there who just need to get their head around the COVID as is impacting the industry and it's impacting their business. And they're not necessarily having deep conversations about industry trends. Rather, they just want to get their team up and operational. But there's, to me, on my side, what I've been hearing is there's a little bit of a shift in philosophy around continuity of operations and realizing that security is the backbone to realizing effective continuity operations, meaning, I see a lot of folks out there trying to stand up, COVID platforms, and they're looking to stand up, new test collection apps. And everybody seems to be in a rush to do some of those things. But at the end of the day, security is enabling the backbone for successful either applications or infrastructure to support COVID or their staff. I was curious if you guys have seen or heard anything on your side related to that topic. And I guess, Zach, as someone who's also close to emergency response and management, like, I'd be interested in your thoughts too.
So my background for the last 5 years, almost, I was the emergency manager for a medium to large size university. And one thing we recognized almost across the board as we were looking at our continuity of operations plans was none of it's going to work if we don't have secure IT and a process to exchange data where people are not keeping anything, local or on thumb drives or anything like that. And certainly universities had some fairly large and really embarrassing situations where, like, laptops were left unsecured, unencrypted, or they're exchanging, information over essentially open networks at your local coffee shop or something. Like, that was literally the plan for some of the offices at the university was, well, we'll just assemble at Starbucks. They've got Wi-Fi and we'll work remotely that way. And so as we dug deeper into that, it got clearer and clearer that essentially the university would not exist without good IT security. I don't think we realized how much bandwidth that would require in a, you know, essentially removing in our case, overnight, almost 50%, and within a week or two, 75% of the workforce remotely. The other thing that I don't think was fully considered was the collaboration end of it. So, you know, it's one thing to plan for your continuity of operations where you're going to go to a remote site where you're all in the same room, but it's totally different when every single person's working from home and now you're on Zoom. And we had Microsoft Teams, thankfully. So a lot of people just switched to Teams and that was built into the enterprise, which was handy. But there was other groups that didn't understand Teams. So they went rogue and they jumped on free versions of Zoom, Slack, you know, whatever they could get into. And frankly, I mean, they had no choice. They're like, we're separate. We have to figure this out. So I think if you don't have it built in your plan, you don't have the security, you don't have collaboration, which is a much more critical thing. We never plan for every single person to be working from home. That makes it so much more challenging. And so like, you know, to both of Travis and Chad's points, when you're talking many devices on a, you know, external network plugging into your domain, and now you're adding 50 different other variables on top of that. I don't know that we would have planned for this, to be perfectly honest, until it happened.
It's interesting. I was talking to a good friend of mine who's a CISO for one of our clients, and we were having this conversation around the, you know, what's life like after a pandemic or during a pandemic for him? How has his life changed and what are his challenges? And one of the things he brought up that was an interesting point was he said, we went overnight from one network, one corporate network, if you will, to 1,000 networks coming into our network. Each individual, each employee brings their own, you know, when they go remote, brings their network back into the corporate network. And the level of vulnerability that risk that creates for the organization and for him is one of his biggest new challenges, if you will. And I thought about that for a second, that perspective of 1,000 networks overnight that you now have to manage and maintain and keep secure. And then he brought up in conjunction with that, an interesting thing is not only does he have to worry about security now, he's got to worry about performance. Performance all of a sudden is an issue, right? VPN access and how these 1,000 networks are accessing. So as they make technology decisions, security technology decisions, he has to really look at how's this going to impact the performance of our network and of our environment. So a kind of a new spin or a new lens that he's looking through as he evaluates the new world that we're living in and how to protect their organization.
Yeah, I would imagine a lot of people are in that same boat. They didn't scale their VPN concentrator according to having their entire staff work remote.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like an internal denial of service.
To that point, Justin, I think there are certain organizations that have unique advantages. You know, if you are nationwide and or even global, right, and you can balance that load of that input of you know, across users of when they're going to be coming in to the network. I had another conversation just recently with a large government contractor, somebody that runs their security operations, and they said that's exactly what they did. They leveraged a tool like Splunk to show them when connections were being made, where the data rich, decisions, the data driven decisions that were being made, how they can use a load balancing tool to kind of help share that. And they had that advantage, right, of certain time zones being on their side. So kind of back to what we were saying, are certain agencies or certain organizations being able to pivot quickly and others not. I think in this environment, we're seeing that some have a unique advantage to them. You know, the ones that got security from the beginning and have an underlying, foundation, if you will, built on a particular platform, but a technology, right? And then they integrate these other technologies. That was one of the biggest things I was excited about coming to New Harbor for, was the relationships and the technology partners that, that existed. You know, these technologies, I mean, we all know that they're not the sell all, the sell all solution just as they stand alone, but it's when they integrate and when they work together and they enhance each other, and that information is shared back. I think that's where the, I think that's where the real value comes into play. And I see some of those agencies that have gotten that early, they were able to make that transition quicker. And it's been more of a seamless process for them.
You kind of made an interesting topic about integration of security technologies, you know, to kind of create that security ecosystem, if you will. How many folks do you come across, or, you know, do you talk with that, you know, philosophically take that same approach to their security posture for their organization?
Not many. Right. It's that old point solution strategy, right? Where you have this particular problem and you take this technology and you apply it to your environment and you don't really have an understanding of how it would play well with the other technologies that are either existing or with your objectives of where you want to take the organization and where you want to go from today. Right. I mean, I think at some point in time, you have to consider the growth of the organization. You have to consider the challenges that you're going to have. I mean, there's things that you're not going to be able to foresee. Government regulations come to mind.
Pandemics
come to mind. Correct. So, I mean, those kind of things, when you have that, when you have the approach that I mentioned earlier, where you have, you know, a foundation of security around your data, and you have, like, let's just say as a tool, you have a SIEM, and you have an endpoint protection tool, right, that keeps those endpoints, those growing number of endpoints, like I mentioned earlier, keeping those safe and monitored, right? And then you have a tool that maybe ties all that together with any new IP that's coming onto your network. You know, those three things are very, very powerful in terms of impacting the ability to scale, as I mentioned, the ability to scale and the overall security of those devices on your network. So, you know, a taking approach that way, as opposed to just, hey, I now have this problem and tacking on or bolting on a solution. I think, you know, if you maybe kind of make a financial comparison, you know, the days of buy and hold stocks, maybe with these market fluctuations we've seen, those days are long gone. You're not just going to be able to bolt on something to solve a problem. Because I think every dollar is being scrutinized of the way it's being spent. And I think you got to be smart about your decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I wonder if also, especially in the, you know, people are hopefully going to listen to this in a few weeks and be like, oh yeah, the continuity of operations. We're so glad we're over that. But, you know, having a single point of failure for your security in a situation like this that can drag on for a long time. I mean, it's, especially if you've got, you know, physical, like you're relying on some physical devices to literally provide some of that security, having a diversified platform that, you know, has some flexibility is probably more robust than previous generations, you know, in a contingency. You know, I feel like that might even be even stronger than just, you know, us trying to make the normal sales pitch that, like, this is a much better way to do things. But in a contingency, it seems like that's potentially even much more, especially, you know, off-prem, having, you know, somebody else sort of being able to manage it so that if you're not able to sort of handle those situations like you would in a normal sunny day scenario.
I agree with that. I think single pane of glass, you know, that ability to be able to, you know, to view what's going on from kind of one view, if you will, is that much more critical today than it ever has been in the past. And I think that organizations that kind of have that are probably in a little better spot than those who do not, or, you know what I mean? So that's what I'm seeing as well.
Guys, to roll this forward one more step, what do you foresee life after COVID as far as trends or directional shifts in the market? Based on what we've seen today, what's happened over the last couple months, do you feel like you can start to see some direction starting to take shape, or do you feel like it's still too early to tell?
I think a lot more people are going to be comfortable working in their pajamas.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that truthfully, it's like they've opened up their eyes, like, oh my gosh, I can do what I need to do. I'm almost more productive sometimes from home than I am in the office. And so, you know, that that future, I don't think is going to change or go away. I think it's only going to grow. You know, whether it's remote learning, it's distance learning, and the way our education system functions, I think is going to be different. And the way corporate America functions, I think, is going to evolve. And a lot of what we're seeing today is not going to go away. It's going to continue to enhance and get stronger for the broader base, if you will. So I think that's here to stay for sure.
Justin, I want to share two examples, and these are two real life examples that I was kind of just blown away by, right? Number one, telemedicine. There was my 6-year-old boy had a particular rash right above his cheek, and we were able to with his pediatric doctor, we were able to hop onto a web conference and diagnose exactly what he thought the rash was with a couple questions. We went to the pharmacy, picked the prescription up, and the rash has been cleared up in 3 days, just based off of that interaction, right? We did not have to go to the office. We did not have to run the risk of waiting on the well side of the waiting room and the sick side of the waiting room. All of that was avoided. So I was blown away by that example. And then the second example with the kids being, you know, home from school and being able to interact with their teacher. I think what it's a blessing and a curse, right? But I think what it's doing is it's setting them up for this as, you know, that type of learning taking place, and it's preparing them for what their work may be one day. I mean, what we're doing here right now, right? We're collaborating, we're sharing idea, we're discussing it, and we're getting this information out to the masses, right? That type of interaction is going to be most likely the direction that they may want to take, you know, one of their future or their employment. So it's kind of exposing them just as we've, you know, given them a device earlier in their lives than any of us have had devices. It's kind of putting that right at the forefront. So I've just seen those two things over these last few weeks. And those are real life tangible examples of how I think after this, it's going to be more widely adopted and more accepted.
Yeah, I think this is a sea change. I don't think we're going back. You know, somebody posted on Facebook, which is also a blessing and a curse in many ways. People have too much time in their hands and they're getting very opinionated and editorial, I've noticed. But someone had posted the other day, like, man, I can't wait for this to get back to normal. And I was sort of like, you know what? I don't think I want to go back. I think this is a new normal. This is really like, you know, again, getting back to that telemedicine thing, which, you know, certainly from a security standpoint, I mean, that's a, you know, we have a role in helping that in the future. But from like an end user perspective, I mean, I just think again of all the folks who never had access to healthcare, who, you know, assuming they have broadband, which is also another, you know, situation. That's one thing in our state of Vermont where not everyone has access. There is an equity issue that comes up when you have this happen. But yeah, I don't know. I'm suddenly like, you know, I feel like I'm talking to people more. Like, it's not in person. I will enjoy, you know, going out for drinks at an actual location and hearing the noise of people. But at the same time, like, yeah, we're in a new world. I mean, I read somewhere that this is like one of the biggest shifts in sort of productivity since World War II. Like, there's never been a movement from one style of work to another so rapidly. That would be like the, you know, factories, you know, switching over and suddenly mass producing stuff. It's not quite the same. We're not the greatest generation in that sense, but certainly like this is going to be a sea change. And I don't think we're going back. I don't frankly want to go back, you know, even in from Vermont, you know, like snow days, like those are things that are tagged on at the end of the year. Everyone hates it. Now we've got, you know, remote learning so that even during a snow day, kids get no respite.
To piggyback off what you're saying, I think it's going to be interesting. This is not technology based, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the education in our country in general. I think that a lot of folks who maybe thought that the concept of homeschooling, if you will, or educating kids at home was not achievable, are seeing that there's a variety of tools and opportunities out there to provide equal education opportunities from the home, if you will. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens at the collegiate level, and certainly at the K-12 level as well, as we continue to adapt to this new reality. For sure. I think it's going to be fun to watch. I think a lot of companies who embrace this, kind of what you're talking about, Zach, they're going to come out winners in this for sure. If they can understand what we all want going forward, and this is important to us, and we like this kind of the lifestyle, if you will, I think there's real upside for companies who understand that and figure out ways to support that environment. Just look at the grocery delivery business, right? I think Amazon is all that everybody talks about, but there's a lot of different grocery delivery services that I think that I know for my family, we're going to take advantage of now going forward for a long time. I may never go to a grocery store again.
Yep. If I never have to go to another grocery store again, exactly. It would be amazing. I hate going to the grocery store.
Yeah. And that those are industry shifts that now have to figure that out, you know, like Instacart, you know, those poor folks went from, again, like their shift, they went from having a pretty cool, you know, side hustle. And now all of a sudden they're on the front lines of a pandemic. And I mean, they are like, I hope all of you are tipping the hell out of those people that are delivering stuff. I'm not saying you are, but anyone who's listening, you better be tipping your Instacart driver for sure.
Tip like crazy. They're putting their lives on the line for all of us. And
especially in small, like, you know, again, you know, Vermont, we get the stuff like, you know, we just found out Michael Jackson died, right? Like it takes forever. Like we're still listening to cassette tapes. It just takes forever for technology to catch up here. And so now all of a sudden we have access to this stuff that like was sort of like really just for Burlington and now the rural areas. And we're like, this is nuts. Like, and I don't live in a super rural area, but I mean, I got to do my first Instacart delivery a few weeks ago. Like city's been doing that for a long time. I'm like, this is great. What the hell were we waiting for? Booze delivery is also not bad. I don't mind that. So
have you guys heard of Uber yet?
I read it in the newspaper the other day, Uber. Something about it.
The Uber pool in Vermont's actually a bunch of people jumping into the back of a wagon.
It's everyone. Yeah. When you, one Uber pool can basically sustain the whole state.
Yeah. Agreed.
Guys. So we're just about out of time here. Gents, this has been really good. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us a little bit. Anything else you'd want to offer in closing?
So I'll throw a question back to you, Justin. If, you know, being where we do security right at New Harbor here, if there was one thing that you could change in the security realm with a wave of a magic wand, what do you think it would be?
I think my hope forward looking is that this is a little bit of an awakening from an IT spend standpoint. And specifically what I mean by that is you just can't buy the commodity networking and switching gear that you used to have. You can't just haphazardly buy an endpoint solution. You just can't haphazardly buy a firewall. There needs to be some forethought and consideration to purposefully buy the tech that you need for events like this. And the one that I would wave would be that folks now take this seriously. They put the appropriate budget behind it to the extent that they're able to. But also more importantly, that they really consider the security architecture of the solutions that they're procuring, right? And so it's not a solution that can only work on-prem. Rather, it takes a progressive security architecture and maybe leverages cloud technologies so that you can distribute your workforce in a secure way. And when we kind of talk about the next generation of technologies that might be being born through this pandemic, be it telemedicine, remote learning, remote grocery delivery, which I plan to take advantage of more. When you think about those technologies that are being born now, is having the right security architectures in place with the correct forethought so that they can grow and scale so that hopefully we wouldn't be impacted by these events materially in the future. That would be my magic wand for right now.
Nice.
It's a sales pitch and a magic wand.
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's true.
Cool. Gents, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know how busy you both are. Zach, thanks for quarterbacking us through this.
No problem. Just so everyone's aware, we are remote. So, and you may have heard children in the background, at least in my house. So we'll try to edit out those sounds, but that is the nature of today. As we were speaking, we're living this. So
that's right. Thanks everyone.
Yeah, great. Glad to be here. Thank you both.
Yeah.
And as always, thank you to New Harbor Security for being our sponsor. Rather than Justin or I pitch this, we're gonna pass it down to Chad and Travis as to why you should go with New Harbor Security.
So guys, again, thanks for having us on the podcast today. Glad and pleasure. It was a pleasure to be here and honored, in fact. If there is ever a better time to reach out to somebody that could help you with the challenges that IT leaders and security analysts are facing today, it would be right now. So New Harbor can help with everything from managed security services security to penetration testing, information assurance, and a host of other assessment and compliance options as well. Would love the opportunity to speak with you. And again, if anything that we said here today makes sense of having a foundational security practice within your environment, again, we're going to be advocates for you. If you're looking for a true partnership, I think that's what you're going to find in New Harbor Security.
Boom. Done. Yeah. Visit us at www.newharborsecurity.com. And you can reach out to Chad or Travis for all of your needs and guidance.